Hi, and welcome to another edition of Talk Hockey Radio. As always, I have with me my co-hosts, Fraser and Simon. Hi, guys.
Hi, Taff.
How are you doing?
What's up?
It's coming out with weird noises now. What a strange reason. How's it going, Fraser?
It's good. Bit cold.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk about that later on, aren't we? Si, how's it going with you?
All smiles and sugar here.
As always. How's your weekend hockey's gone? I mean, I think I'm going to talk about it a little bit, whatever, but club hockey going all right for you guys?
I don't think any hockey got played at all last weekend.
No.
No, all right, not last weekend, but since we didn't, we haven't recorded. So you've got 4 weeks to sort of like say.
I got appointed to a very exciting game and it got frozen off half time. But I have been appointed to the rearrangement, which is terribly exciting, on the 31st of January, which is a Wednesday. So I'm expecting quite a big crowd. And I've asked if Surbiton's first teams will be coming along to hurl abuse at us. Give us umpire coaching. So we get Brendan Creed there as an umpire coach, considering all the wonderful feedback on the umpires.
Fraser, what about you?
Yeah, season's been going all right. I've actually had a couple of weeks off, including the frozen pitch, because I was away, but yeah, we've been picking up some good results.
Cool. So on to what we're going to be talking about, Si. So go on then, run us through what we're going to be talking about.
Do you want me to go through all the topics or should we go one by one?
Can you go through all of them in song form?
No.
Well, just pick one at random if you want, you know.
Well, shall we start with Watch.hockey and TNT?
Yep. Okay, let's go for it. So give us a breakdown and then we can sort of like have a chat.
Well, it started off as, in news that would shock anyone who's listened to this before, a rant about how crap Watch.hockey is. But then we found out this evening, that TNT still have the rights to Pro League, with no explanation given. But yeah, so for me, I don't know where to start. I mean, there's so much to criticise about it. I think the first thing, and the worst thing in a way, is the misadvertising of the price by the FIH. They didn't put the dates. There's no sort of end date for their offer. I don't know, obviously, about other countries, but in the UK, you've got to put the end date, and they didn't. So that discount should still be applied until it's not. So I don't think that's acceptable, and I've been completely ignored in contacting FIH about it. So I think that's poor practice from anyone, from an international sports federation. That's totally unacceptable. They should have far higher standards. The actual value for what you pay is pretty good, to be fair. I think, like, the quality of the competitions and all that, that's pretty good. The app, again, shockingly, is crap. You can't minimize the screen to go and do something else, which makes social media engagement pretty difficult, which is something that you need in a sport. Make it easy for people to talk about it. So if something happens, you want to go on Twitter and go, Jesus Christ, you see that goal? Instead, yeah. You have to leave the app, tweet, come back, and hope you didn't miss anything. And on top of that, it just randomly skips. You'll be watching a match. There's no obvious buffering that's happened. And suddenly it skips forward a few seconds or maybe even a minute. And you don't know what's happened. So, yeah, I'm just, you know, it's better than it used to be. But it's still rubbish.
Well, I mean, you're saying that it skips, right? Maybe that was the, you know, when we were talking about it maybe about a year ago or whatever, when it sort of like totally went blank for a while and then came back on again. Maybe that's the actual skip now. So it doesn't go blank now, it just skips forward.
Yeah, and credit where it's due, we haven't seen any stupid adverts telling everyone we need to go to India's best kept secrets. That's been a nice change. Giving credit where it's due. And the commentating is very good for the most part.
Yeah. Fraser?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't purchase the pass for no other reason than I just forgot to, and then the offer ended.
Ah, but did
I
it?
Do, well... I was going to say, I think the only way you get any sort of momentum for feedback from the FIH is if you sued them for whatever legal stuff they've breached for UK advertising. But yeah, so with the Watch.hockey app, I remember there was a way to get the floating picture so you could use other apps. So that's possibly even a step backwards from where they were if you can't do that anymore. But I mean... It's not a huge ask, is it, to stream a live feed through the app without it skipping for no apparent reason? Surely that's the bare minimum you want from a sports app.
Yeah. I mean, suppose, you know, they might have that, you know, pop-out window or whatever, but it probably isn't that user friendly or easy to find. Possibly, I don't know, or maybe it doesn't exist anymore. Who knows?
I mean, it wasn't user friendly before. There was a lot of fiddling to get it to work, but
quite true. I mean, like, it's kind of weird that NC can still show the, you know, Pro League stuff, isn't it? I mean,
so as we've just discussed,
my
guess is that when BT Sports bought the rights, they bought for X number of years, thinking that the Pro League was going to run year end. With the FIH going to the season's approach and starting whenever they feel like it, it's possible that BT Sports, now TNT, still hold the license until the end of the year. So they can't be kind of locked out from the content because that's what's in the contract.
Yeah. So you think we've got it until end of December then, and then that's it, possibly?
Yeah, possibly. Or with the stuff around COVID, maybe they paid for so many seasons of the Pro League and the FIH thinking that it was X number of years, it's now expired, when in actual fact, there's some kind of clause in there where, you know, if they didn't run it, it just carries over. It's a legal document, so it's kind of in the wording for how it is.
I think something that's interesting, though, is if you're right, and obviously this is wild speculation on our part, but if you're right, an interesting thing is it hasn't been shoved to one side for something that might maybe be more mainstream. So it is getting coverage, and that's surely a good thing. It's not been buried.
Yeah.
I do think it's a bit disappointing that there's been bugger all communication that it was on TNT until we spotted some players talking about it and thinking, did no one tell them it's left TNT? And then finding out actually it is back on TNT.
So I would probably say that leans more towards the idea that they've got it for X number of years, and so it's up to the end of the year. So TNT aren't going to bother putting any kind of advertising money towards something that they're only going to show a couple of games from.
Yeah.
And likewise, the FIH probably doesn't want everyone talking about the fact that it's going to be on TNT. And by everyone, I mean England, GB, players, staff, talking about it, the fact it's going to be on TNT when they've made a whole push of saying, oh, it's available everywhere in the world other than India, where it's going to be on television with no geo-blocking. And then immediately the first games are geo-blocked because someone else still holds the rights in certain regions.
Yeah. Well,
I know I'd feel like a bit of an idiot if I'd made a big song and dance about being the only place where you can watch something only to find out you could watch it somewhere else.
Or the fact that you bought the pass, thinking, you know, you want to watch the Pro League or whatever, and then finding out that if you've got TNT, you know, BT Sport or whatever, that you can actually watch it on there, and you didn't have to actually pay the money. I know you get other stuff as well.
That's a second possible false advertising thing. If you then can't watch the Pro League, because it did say all Pro League games would be watchable through Watch Up. So. A second lawsuit for Simon to put in.
Yes.
But did they say it was going to be exclusively on there?
Yes.
Well, did they? Okay.
With the caveat of India, I believe.
Okay.
I remember India being in the press release stuff about being the only place where it was going to be televised.
Yeah, I get that. Well, you know, those people that bought it and bought the pass and then finding out it's on BT or TNT, sorry, I'm going to be pretty disappointed. Like I said, I get that you get other stuff with it as well. You know, it's not just the Pro League games, but it's still disappointing, isn't it? Anyway, right. Shall we, I don't know, swiftly move on?
Go on, then.
Okay, what are we going to go for?
So the next thing on our fantastic hit list, because we're trying to get this done before said Pro League starts, is Pro League and the Junior World Cup.
Okay.
What should we start with?
We just talked about so Junior World Cup, because is that happening? That's happening now, isn't it, really?
It is happening. Shit going down. So the women's or the junior girl, I don't know what you call it, the women's Junior World Cup is happening. They are now at quarterfinal stage, and the men's is in the group stages. It's just started yesterday, I think.
Yeah, yesterday.
When the quarterfinals played today?
Yeah, I think half of them are today, half of them tomorrow. No, all of them today.
Okay. So have you been watching it? Have you watched any? I've caught some highlights, but not watched all of it, though.
I've caught bits and bobs.
Okay. What's your sort of, like, you know, view on that, then?
Mixed. some of the individual stuff has been really impressive. I'm just trying to find there's a goal. Here it is. God, right. See if I can pronounce this correctly. Trencher Belliers scored an unreal goal where Pien Dikker span back onto her backhand and then played like a reverse push pass into the circle from outside of 25. And then Belliers ran onto it and managed to sort of like lob it on the run on a bounce on a half volley over the sprinting on goalkeeper. It was a spectacular goal. I think Belgians have been quite a shock in a positive way. They smashed Germany. They've got De Mott and Bonamy, who stand out in particular. And then for England, I think Maddie Axford's been doing really well in terms of, like, she's a very powerful athlete and quite good at confronting players. So, yeah, it's been good on that front, but I've also been a bit surprised, and maybe it's naive on my part, that whilst the skill level and the athleticism has been really high, the tactical stuff has been terrible at times. I'm just dribbling straight into flat sticks over and over and over and over again. Yeah, what do you reckon, Fraser? Have you watched any of it?
No, like I say, I've not got the FIH pass at the minute. So I've been watching some of the highlights, but some of the minutiae of the game that you're talking about is probably the stuff that gets cut out. Like, I can't imagine there's a big audience for watching people dribble into flat sticks in the middle of the pitch. Unless it's a big tackle or some unique bit of skill, it's the sort of stuff that gets cut out. But I always wonder with the Junior World Cup, do you think that players are now starting to see it as a platform to launch themselves into the senior side or into a major club setup? So maybe they're trying to have that big viral moment to get their name out there. Because I know that other players have kind of not launched their career, but got their name out there and made themselves a bigger star within the sport.
But that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen if they keep dribbling to sticks.
Well, no, but...
But you know what? That's juniors for you, though, isn't it, really?
I do think maybe in some of the smaller countries that might, or the less high-profile nations, that might be the case. Obviously, with GB, a lot of them are already integrated through the GB EDP program. And some of them, in fact, are already in the senior squad. So Katie Curtis is in the senior squad, I believe. Yeah, she's made her international debut already for England. And then people like Maxford are in the EDP squad. So some of that's already happened, but maybe in the smaller countries that is the case. But I'm just surprised when, like, obviously I umpire a number of the players who play in Div 1, and I've seen a few of them at my own club as well. I've seen a few of them playing at Prem level as well. So, you know, these are people who know what they're doing. No tactics, you know, they know what they should be doing. They've got good coaches, and yet some of the tactical stuff. And maybe it's just that lack of discipline, lack of experience. They don't have a cool head on the pitch to sort of just, you know, like, they don't have a Laura Roper to just calm it down, pass the ball safe, all that sort of stuff. It is just a bit of end-to-end stuff. But on the other hand, maybe having like almost like basketball approach of just attack, attack, attack is a good thing.
So we've talked about it before, how the US always had an inexperienced team because they were sort of passing off college students or university age students as like the senior in the team with a couple of years of international experience. Do you think maybe that plays into it with the under 21s? Like, yes, some of them have gone and got international experience, but does that give them the kind of leadership role within the team when they're still young and naive? They don't have like a Laura Roper to shout at them and get them back on track of what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, possibly.
Whereas they're looking to the people who have got, you know, a couple of senior caps to do that role, and they're not experienced enough to do it. Future Taff, if you want to cut out this long thinking section.
Yeah. Size thinking or a response.
I can see your point. I'm just surprised, like, when you consider so many, like, you look, like, obviously, like, we know the England team better than we do the other countries. So many of them play in the English Prem, and you just would expect better tactical discipline. I don't know so much of the Dutch and the Belgians. I know some of the Belgians who play at Gantoise, but otherwise, I don't really know them. So, you know, but they must all be playing at least the Belgian team in the top division. I mean, I'm sure in the Dutch team, a few of them are, and the Germans as well.
Sorry, go on.
No,
I was going to say,
your point on the Americans is interesting, though.
Playing at a high level with an experienced head on the pitch to sort of keep you in line, and playing at a high level without that are two very different situations. So always having that safety net of having that experienced player to get you back on track when things are going pear-shaped, and then losing that and almost becoming that within the age group stuff could have a very noticeable effect. Maybe that's why we're not seeing the tactical play be as high level as we're expecting. Pure speculation, but
I mean, would the tactical play not depend on the coach as well and how they want them to play as well, right? So it should come from the coach, shouldn't it? So if they're playing like National League Div 1 or whatever, they're playing with obviously some experienced players and possibly some juniors as well, right? And then you've got the coaches that are actually saying, you know, this is what I want you to do at certain stages of the game, right? That is possibly happening, hopefully, in international as well. But it all depends on how that's put across to the players, right? And how he or she...
Yeah, I think if you look at England, though, they've got Simon Letchford. He is a championship-winning coach in the top European division. He's coached national teams as either an assistant or a league coach, I think.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing, and you can hear him on the team talks when they put the camera in and then know he's in. And he talks just like any other coach I've heard at international level. You know, I don't think it's necessarily down to him. I think probably Fraser's right. Maybe it is just a lack of maturity. But it's just one of those things. Just, I was surprised. It's just an observation, I suppose. That's what it's there for. It's a development. I do think it's ridiculous that the FIH Rising Star Award is just going to go to whoever they think the best player is at this tournament. I mean, that's a joke. But there we go. That's the FIH Award summed up.
Which we will talk about later if you want to.
Yeah.
I was going to say, do you want to segue into the Star Awards?
Yeah,
should we touch on Pro League? And also, we also wanted to cover the video referrals.
Go on then. Let's go to Pro League and then we'll move on.
Well, on the video referrals, it's been noted that they've been very rushed. And obviously this is with the incredible high resolution of Watch.hockey, but it looks like the wrong decision's been made a few times when it's gone to video referral. I could give an example today where the ball changed direction in the shadows underneath a German foot. It had clearly hit the foot. You couldn't see it had, but there's no way the ball would have changed direction otherwise. So that one, maybe you could possibly argue you couldn't see that it definitely did it, but I think it's impossible to think that. But then there are other ones where the video referral happens and you think, well, this is definitely going to be a long corner, and it ends up being a penalty stroke. And realise very quickly, these are happening in 30, 40 seconds. They're watching it once or twice, and the pressure is clearly, they've been given an edict of 60 to 90 seconds, preferably, and they're rushing it, and they're making mistakes as a consequence. And I think, personally, yeah, when we had things like, there was that time at Lee Valley where it was about 15 minutes of trying to get a video umpire decision, that's too long, correct. Yeah. But 30 seconds, rushing it and getting it wrong is also not okay.
No.
It needs to be a happy medium. And, you know, like 2 minutes maximum, that gives them time to watch it back a number of times and then give advice. But I think 2 minutes maximum, and when it's game critical as well, it's got to get it right.
Yeah.
And that's something that, as a sport, we've been able to be proud of for a long time. And we can look at football and laugh at how crap they are. They're getting stuff wrong with all the money and camera angles they've got. And we had such a high volume of success. And then in this tournament, it's not been of the same standard. And I don't think it's the quality of the umpires. I think it's the pressure they're put under.
Yeah, their briefing might have changed. Like you're saying, you know, they've been told to rush it, or they've got X amount of minutes or seconds or whatever to review it and whatever. And you're quite right. I think there's got to be a happy medium. It can't be 15 minutes, right? And it can't be 30 seconds or 90 seconds or whatever. It's got to be. There's got to be a happy medium. I mean, even if it means that they're going on for about 3 or 4 minutes, that's still okay. People want the right decision, don't they, really, at the end of the day? And especially if we can actually see the different angles that they show when they do their video referrals. And if you're an umpire, you know, you're looking for certain things. If you're a player, you're still looking for certain things. If you're a spectator, you're expecting certain things, aren't you, really? So if we're turning around and looking at it and thinking, well, that's definitely a PC, or it's definitely a stroke, or it's definitely this, or it's definitely that, and that doesn't happen, and the majority of people probably are thinking exactly the same as us, as, you know, experienced players, experienced umpires, and, you know, maybe spectators as well. Okay, I'm not saying that spectators don't know what what the decisions might be or whatever, or what the ruling might be. But, you know, they'll have a good understanding, won't they? And it doesn't come off, and you know for a fact it's not right, then there's got to be something wrong, isn't there, Fraser?
I was just thinking, wild speculation from Taff that there's any spectators of hockey that don't know the rules of hockey. There's no casual hockey fans, Taff.
No, look, there are some people that, you know, go and watch hockey with their spouses or whatever. They might not know much about the sport, and they go just to support. I know my missus, you know, she doesn't really know a lot about hockey, but she'll come and watch some games with me or whatever. You know, it's not, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to anyone. I'm just trying to speculate, really, and that goes for players and umpires as well. You know, I mean, us as umpires and players and coaches get it wrong as well anyway. So, you know, we won't get it right all the time, but more often than not, you know, you know what the right decision is going to be, and when it doesn't happen, you think, wow, that's what a decision. And that, I mean, that's happened in the past as well, even when we've had longer video referrals and stuff. But
they've made some good changes to the regulations in terms of like what happens if the on-pitch umpire disagrees with the video umpire, the team keep their referral. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
The ability to refer serious misconduct is definitely a good thing. I just think the 60 to 90 second guideline's a bit nuts. I can understand where it's come from. I think it's too much of a reaction.
Yeah.
2 minutes maybe would have been more sensible with get the decision right, not necessarily get it out fast, especially when there's no crowd there. It's not like in the group stages, those stadia have been absolutely rammed. Maybe at the finals you could understand it. Anyway, should we move on to Pro League?
Yeah, go for it.
So are you too excited?
I don't know. Probably not. Sorry. You know, that's just me.
I can barely contain myself.
I just think, I honestly think that it's too much for our international players, right? And I honestly think that the Champions Trophy should come back. We should bring back the Champions Trophy for sure, because I thought that was such a better standard of tournament, you know, especially when you have it and it's for a week or whatever, and you get to see so many games, so many different, you know, countries playing, and it's not like, you know, one weekend, two weekends or whatever. I mean, I think this year in England, we're actually having a good run of it, aren't we? In terms of from 1 week to the next, I think it's about 10 days of hockey or with some rest in between, obviously. So it's going to seem more like a Champions Trophy kind of tournament type thing, because it's the games are so close, one after the other kind of thing. But it's good that it's gone that way, so people can actually book holidays if they want to stay in London or whatever, and be there for the whole 10 days or 11 or whatever, however many days. I can't remember how many days it is now.
How much of a masochist they are, doesn't it?
Sorry?
Depends how much of a masochist they are if they want to come over here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you do get some people who are diehard fans and will take off a week or 2 weeks or whatever just to watch some hockey. But if it's going towards the Champions Trophy route kind of thing again, isn't it? Where they're having to put all these games on so close one after the other, right? So let's just bring the Champions Trophy back. We'll have more teams playing hockey. We'll get more hockey to watch. Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
I'm going to come at it from a different angle.
Well,
you aren't going to watch it.
Why not?
So when there is 5-6 games of hockey a day, do you really think people are going to watch 5 games of hockey in a day?
I mean, look.
And then 5 games of hockey the next day. Games of hockey the next day.
They might
and
not.
Then 5 games of hockey the next day. So.
Did you finish? No, go ahead.
So Keely was talking about this recently on FH Umpires. She watched almost every game, I think, at the Tokyo Olympics, and it meant that she had to basically not sleep for a week.
Mm.
I think that there's just not the audience, and if they're trying to build an audience of people watching the games, having them more spread out is better for the global audience rather than the local audience. How many of the games have you been able to watch from the Junior World Cup, Simon, with your pass in full?
In full, none. Because they're on during a working day. I sometimes catch maybe the start or the end of a game in the morning. I've managed to get the England matches on in the background, and then sometimes the evening matches, but very rarely do I watch the whole thing. I agree.
the benefit of the Champions Trophy format is on the day you will get a crowd if you sell it at a sensible price. So not England hockey prices, charging 75 quid for two matches. That's a ridiculous cost.
Yeah.
20 quid.
On the day, England GB could sell out Lee Valley if they didn't charge ridiculous prices.
Yeah.
I think if they weren't charging what they're charging for tickets, if it was 10 quid, they could probably sell out the entirety of the stadium from two or three big London clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, with I don't know how the pricing works or whatever. More often than not, do you not reckon that they're not? I don't think England hockey make any sort of money on these tournaments. Really, they actually make a lot.
They definitely don't make money in the fact that they don't sell at Lee Valley with the prices that they're charging. How they work out the prices, I don't know. But
I think
likewise, I think the number of games on in the day is only really beneficial for people who are going down for 1 or 2 days. Yeah. You're not going to get people going down for 2 weeks.
But now I'm going to argue. I'm going to go on the other side of this, right? But if it was just a fanfare tournament type thing, you know, like the Champions Trophy used to be, in terms of really hammering it out, in terms of getting it advertised and things like that, right? Okay, it would work. I think so. People might not go there for 2 weeks, but they might go for a week or weekenders and things like that, right?
Yeah, it's normally a 9-day tournament, and you see lots of people on the first weekend and lots of people on the last weekend.
And then there's a trickle during the week because obviously people work and stuff, right?
So that's exactly what the Pro League was last year, without the days in the middle. They did a weekend, had the week off, did the following weekend.
Yeah. I get that. But then you've got other games as well that they play, no?
Right. Yeah, that's the other problem, mate. So, for example, the Netherlands will play against Great Britain in Argentina. Now, that might be the anomaly, because the opportunity to go and particularly watch the Dutch women play might be a big hook for locals. The Dutch men, not so much. And certainly the British men and British women are not going to be a big hook for the locals. But largely, you know, when we had, say, China versus Spain or something like that in England, or China versus USA, it was dead.
Yeah.
When it was GB playing, it was pretty well sold.
Yeah.
So also with that, they put last year they put the two away teams on like a Friday lunchtime.
Yeah.
So they were knocking back at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, which is a ridiculous time, because it meant people had to have time off work to go and watch. Like, the start time for the GB game was not amazing. Was it 5:30 or something like that?
Yeah, you didn't have time to get there from work.
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's something that needs to be done about that. Well, no, even if they want to play on a Friday, it's got to be at a time where people can finish work and commute. Even if it's just people in London can commute, having finished a day's work at a normal time.
Yeah, like a 7:30 pushback or an 8 o'clock pushback.
Yeah.
But then the thing is, they won't put money on the stands anyway. I think we're probably going to the minutiae of business operation here. I mean, one of the things I find a bit interesting is, will teams care? Because obviously, initially, teams did not care at all. Then I think when they added a bit of the qualification opportunity, teams cared until they couldn't win it. And then the relegation stuff was a farce, because the teams who got relegated stayed up anyway, because the people who were coming up couldn't afford it. So I wonder if we'll see the same thing again. If you look at the squads that have been selected for this tournament, the first one, that's the legit teams. It's not a development squad. Obviously, it helps the Junior World Cups on at the same time. But when we get to the end of the tournament, if, I don't know, Spain are mid-table, are they really going to bother sending a full squad, or will they wait because they've got the Olympics or something to worry about?
So I would say this isn't much of a case for whether or not it's the development squads, because the major leagues are all on break for winter in Europe.
That's true.
And the problem was that the Dutch and Belgian players were tied up with club hockey, which is where they're making their money, rather than at the international stuff. So they were staying to play the club finals rather than travelling for internationals.
Yeah, true.
Dare I say it, would we be better off going the football route then, and how they actually schedule their games?
But having international breaks?
Sorry?
Do you mean having international breaks?
Yeah, that as well, yeah. And then
have international breaks. I think it's a joke we don't.
Yeah, 100%.
And playing, like, you know, evening matches, like we're saying, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock starts or whatever. Or even like Saturday and Sunday games or something like that. And I think
so. What
the major problem is, right, is that it's not accessible, is it? Even on TV or whatever. But football obviously is at the moment. It's not easily accessible, is it? Really?
No.
So all I was saying was a high volume of games in a short period means that you're not going to get the audience. If the FIH is trying to build an audience of people to watch hockey, having a few games over a weekend, if you can't watch on that weekend, you can maybe catch up during the week. If during the week there's another 10 games, you're not going to catch up. You're only going to get people watching the odd 10, 15 minutes. Maybe they watch a full game when their home nation's playing.
Yeah.
I think for an audience, the Pro League is a better format. For a hockey fan who's going to go down and wants to watch as much hockey as they can in a short period, a tournament format like the Champions Trophy would be better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, the other thing that I find frustrating, again, this is maybe speaking to the hockey geek in me, but I think it's a legit problem, is I know that they've had to change it every year because every year the Pro League's been crap, but it was this idea of, okay, if your team is going away to this country this year, then next year that team comes to you. This is the third season in a row that Argentina have hosted GB. So I've been told the unofficial reason is because they don't want to travel.
So.
And they'll pack out their stands, and I completely get that. But on the other hand, if this is a legitimate competition, how is that fair?
Yeah.
So the initial idea was everyone plays home and away against everyone.
Yeah.
That was too expensive. So then the following year, it was going to be you would host a country for the home game, and the following season, you'd play them in the away game. That didn't really work because that was still too expensive. So then they changed it again to this mini tournament format. And it seems like there is no control over who hosts when. It's honestly seems like names are drawn out of a hat for who's going to host and then who they're going to play against.
Do you think that they're actually trying to see whether they can actually get a decent format going so that it is quite exciting? I don't know. I mean, like you're saying, you know,
they're just trying to keep it going. And that they're at the whim of the stronger nations.
This is a question for you both. How long do you think is this going to last now? Do you give it another year, 2 years, whatever, or are they going to start trying to keep grinding on and changing the format now and again to see
whether Thierry Vils is gone makes it more likely that it'll be axed soon.
Okay.
And Batra's gone.
Yeah, yeah. So do you think because of those two leaving, it's going to change a little bit then?
I hope so.
Or at least it might still be called the Pro League, but the format's going to be pretty different.
Well, it's changed every year, so it's probably going to change again, isn't it?
Yeah. But go on.
I was going to say, I think the biggest problem with the Pro League is that it's costing the people involved so much money.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's ever got to a point where it's a sustainable product.
It's not.
Let alone trying to understand the format that they keep tinkering with.
Yeah.
It's not a sustainable product. It requires countries to go into debt to run. And that's the biggest problem. They need major sponsorship to come in and brand the Pro League and cover the travel costs at the very least.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you want one good thing about it? Actually, it's two good things, technically.
Go on.
Ava Lacuda and Lidové Velten are back.
Okay.
And have you seen how much the FIH are happy about this? They're sticking Ava Lacuda everywhere.
Oh, they?
Yeah, everywhere. But, you know, that's two really good players who are very nice people who have won everything. So it's hardly a surprise
that
we'd have them back. I just think it's incredible that it's taken this long for the coach to pull his head out of his arse. As everyone knows, I'm a big fan of his. I'm sure he's indifferent.
Don't think you've mentioned it before.
Should we move on to the...
Yeah. I think we should before you start, with your little rant. Yeah. Let's go for it.
So, should we start with the women's?
Yeah, go for it.
Now, the short list is Charlotte Engelbert from Belgium, Rosie Malone from Australia, Eugenia Trinchinetti from Argentina, Sander Vard from Netherlands, and Sonja Zimmermann from Germany. Who would you go with and why?
Okay.
You can pick your favorite and you can give your honorary mention. You have to say why.
Go on, Fraser. I'll let you handle this first. And then it gives me a bit more time to think.
Coward.
You can just say you don't know, Tuff.
I'm just looking at the list and there's some pretty decent players there, right? And
you hope so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to take a back seat just ever so slightly for now.
I personally voted for Engelbert because I think she has stood out quite a lot in Belgium, who are on the rise, let's be fair, but are not the strongest team. And I think that she has done a lot in helping them move up through the rankings as quickly as they have done. Whenever I've seen them play, she seems to be a big part of it. So,
okay. I was probably going to go for Zimmerman. Only for the fact that, you know, they're kind of like, you know, Germany used to be a powerhouse, right? Way back when. Now, they're not so much. Now, Zimmerman actually stands out of the crowd in the German setup, I think, personally. Obviously, she's on the list anyway, so she does stand out. And I think if we get more players like her, well, if Germany get more players like her in the squad and can develop the squad in a way that, you know, they can start competing, and I'm not saying they don't compete, but start competing at a higher level, and, you know, give people, you know, teams like Netherlands and Belgium a good run for their money, I think, you know, that might work out. Hopefully. What about yourself, Si?
So I think Lottie Engelbert is a good shout. I'm really pleased that she left Racing and went to Den Bosch. I think it will really advance her game because she was the best player at Racing for a while. And that's not a player that young. That's not a good thing. I think Sonny Zimmerman, you're right. Oh, she's a great player. I got to see her, I think, crazy over there as well at the indoor domestic finals last year in England. She's playing for Repton. She's not bad at hockey. and saw her at Pro League and other things. And yeah, she's very good. But I would have gone with Sandra Dard. I think on one hand, she maybe doesn't stand out so much because she's surrounded by ridiculous players anyway. And it's just standard and accepted that the Netherlands will win. Where I think she really shines is actually at the club game, because at Skitzer, they've done very, very well in the last couple of years. And I think a lot of that is down to her. So in the national team, you never see her balls it up. She's got everything. She's also becoming increasingly a very good on-pitch leader. And then at club level and at EHL, she's been one of the best players and has helped lift them. I know the FIH don't like to look beyond international competitions, but they should. So I'd go with Zander Vard. So if we move on to men, nomination.
Each of us different there, aren't
we? We've got Thierry Brinkman, Jeremy Hayward, Hardik Singh, Zach Wallace and Nicholas Vellen.
And I think we can all agree there's an obvious choice.
Well, the voting system's changed, so maybe not this time. Hopefully some common sense will prevail.
Go on then, we'll start with you again, Fraser. Then I'll come in and then we'll bring in Si after that.
Yeah, because again, you just don't want to go first half.
Yeah, you know.
So I did vote for Zach Wallace in this. I think he's an exciting player. I think he has that spark of he can make something from anything, and as the internet will tell you, he scores really good volleys, which is an important part of the game now. You've got to be able to smash an aerial in the D into the corner of the goal.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to agree with you, because looking at that list, I would have gone with Wallace as well, because like, and for the same sort of like reason that you've come out with, exciting player, probably you can expect some great stuff from him, you know, whenever he's on the pitch, whether he can hit a volley or not. He's overall hockey is really good, you know. Elimination skills, you know, pretty quick, isn't he, on his stick skill
drag.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. And even like the aerial drags and stuff like that, I've seen him do that a couple of times. So yeah, I'd go with Wallace on that one as well. I know he's England, but yeah, definitely.
Wow. I like Zach Wallace, but I wouldn't vote for him. I'm very pleased he's gone to Bloemendaal. I think it will definitely advance. It was great to play at RKC, but to be at Bloemendaal is even better. Playing with people like Arthur van Doren and the person I think should win it, Thierry Brinkman. To me, I think Brinkman is just on a level above everyone in terms of his everything he delivers is so good. If he's dribbling, he delivers. If he's passing, he delivers. If he shoots, he delivers. Every element of his game is supreme. Some people don't like him because he can be a bit of a knob. Fine. I think that's okay. On the pitch, he can be a knob, but off the pitch, he's a good guy. But he's just a little magician. he can do some amazing things. Like if I was the guy in charge of marketing communication for FIH, I would want Zach Wallace to win, because it'd be a great excuse to pump out even more stuff of him twatting goals in from dumb angles. But as a hockey person, I'd probably think Thierry Brinkmann deserves it.
Okay.
So which one we got? Oh.
Just to be clear, when I said I think there was an obvious answer, I actually think it's Velen.
Really?
But I do think it's the best all-round player in the game at the minute.
I thought he had a very good World Cup.
He did have a very good World Cup, is probably the only thing that the FIH watched when making up their mind about who should be included. But yeah. I do think he's had a lot of good performances. He's had a lot of good performances when Germany were not performing and sort of dragged them through certain games where they probably should have been beaten and got them a result. You're not wearing a watch, Simon.
No, I thought I spotted something. Right, next thing was FIH Goalkeeper of the Year for the women. We have Jocelyn Bartram, we have Kelsey Bing, Jostein Koenig, Savita from India, and Julia Sontag from Germany. Taff, you have to go first. You can't keep making Fraser do it.
Damn it. You know, I've not seen some of these.
You must be following the FIH on social media, because they've only put out Savitas.
Yeah. That's pretty much all I've seen, really, to be fair. But in terms of goalkeepers, Bartram, I would go with. I've seen her sort of like obviously in goal and stuff, and some of the stuff that she's done is pretty amazing. Comes out with some, you know, incredible saves and consistently pretty decent. I would say, I don't know. As much as I've seen her and some of the others, I think she probably stands out more than them. To be fair, I've only seen her, Bing, and Sontag. Yeah. So I've not seen the other two.
Fraser, who would you go with?
Koenig. Pardon? I think you could have quite easily put both of the Dutch keepers on this list. I think far and away, the two Dutch keepers have been phenomenal in the past year. And genuinely think it could have just been a flip of a coin as to which one they put in.
But they're consistently good, though, usually anyway, aren't they?
Is that not what you want from a goalkeeper?
it is.
That's a pretty rogue approach you're taking, man.
No, but what I'm saying is...
just rotate the outfielders in the pads.
What I meant was, it's expected of them, isn't it, really? I was thinking about... people like goalkeepers or whatever that you want to see that they've improved and are, you know, as good as somebody else or whatever. Do you know what I mean? With the Netherlands, I think you expect them to be really good, don't you? And you'd expect them to be on this list. But whether they deserve it or not, I don't know. You know, they probably do.
You're trying to talk yourself out of talking them out of a nomination there, Taff. I'm not sure which side of the argument you actually think you're on.
No, I'm still with my pick, really. I think overall phenomenal goalkeeper from what I've seen, and like I said, I've not seen the other two that I mentioned, and Conning was one of them, so I can't really comment on her ability. Si?
I would go with Kelsey Bing. Every time I've seen her play, I mean, she's been on the wrong side of a hiding for most part, but she still pulls it out of the bag, and it's not like she's got the best defence in the world in front of her. And frequently it's against some incredible attackers, and yet she still delivers. I do think Jostein Koenig is a very good goalkeeper, but when you've got probably the best defence in the world in front of you, it's quite hard to not look like you should. Well, quite often she has nothing to do, and she manages to deliver. So I think that's a really hard thing to do. I definitely would put her above Anna Wijnaldal. I think Anna Wijnaldal's a good goalkeeper, but I just think that Jostein Koenig's a better goalkeeper. But for me, I'd give it to Kelsey Bing. So we move on to men. Goalkeeper, we have Pirmin Blak, we have Andrew Charter, we have Jean-Paul Danneberg, Ollie Payne, and Vincent Vanache.
Well, Si, you go first this time.
I am probably not going to surprise anyone with
I think, you know, we all know who you're going to go for, because you've just got a romance going on with him, sort of thing. Go on.
I'm not sure you got the right guess, Ben. Ollie Payne would be my pick. I think I thought it was a joke that he didn't get the goalkeeper tournament for World Cup. He's just, again, like I was saying with Thierry Brinkmann, just doesn't ever seem to not deliver. With Ollie Payne, it's the same. He delivers in everything. Penalty corners, sorted. Shuttles, or shootouts, sorted. open play sorted, everything's there. He is an amazing goalkeeper. And whilst we do have some very good players in defence and in general in the team, we are not the best in the world. And yet, we conceded almost no goal. The conceded rate was, I think, the lowest in the World Cup for him. So that alone should have been enough to have got him it. Vincent Van Aanschot got it, I think, probably mostly because of his name and because he's devilishly handsome. And he's obviously a very good goalkeeper, but I just think that Ollie Payne is the best out there and comfortably so. I think we're lucky that actually both him and James Mazzarello would probably walk into any national team right now. They'd probably be at least the second choice, probably the first choice for any country, including the ones on this list.
Do you know what? I wasn't expecting that. I was actually expecting you go for Van Ash.
I know.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't expecting that. That's why I was like saying, yeah, we know you're going to. But then you like, you know, you lowball me and come out with Ollie Payne. Wow. Okay.
That's what I voted for.
Fraser?
Yeah, again, I went for Ollie Payne. I think, as I said, both of the England goalkeepers would walk into any setup at the minute. Kind of the same as I said about the Dutch goalkeepers in the last one. I think both of them are phenomenal. But as I said, I think Payne is by far the best goalkeeper in the world on the men's hockey side. I don't really think anyone can have a strong argument against that. The way he exploded onto the scene from making his debut to turfing out the two long-standing goalkeepers in the GB setup, it's very clear how good he was from his first game. And I don't think he's really put a foot wrong since then. And oddly, Taff, I like consistent and good goalkeepers.
Bugger off. Anyway, yes.
We've got some breaking news.
Oh.
The squad for GB versus Argentina women's just been published whilst we were recording.
Oh, okay, go on.
There is one particularly interesting decision made, which I did not anticipate.
Yeah, go on.
Anna Toman's been made captain.
Oh, wow.
So Holly Pernwebb's injured at the minute.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. I expected it to go to Laura Roper.
Well, that's
it's a really nice touch. Considering she's been out for a year.
She's only just come back anyway. We were gonna talk about her as well anyway. We can still talk about it in a minute. Okay, so with the men's goalkeepers, I would have gone for Ollie Payne as well. I think it was a long time coming.
Even though he's good.
Sorry, hey.
Even though he's good.
No. And consistent.
You know, I like to put a spanner in the works sometimes. I think, like I was saying, I think it was a long time coming, him getting into the squad and then obviously being the goalkeeper for England GB. And it was, I think it was only because we had some long-standing goalkeepers in pre him, didn't we, really? So it was quite kind of hard to get them turfed out or even, you know, try to sort of like... what's the word? Try to look like you were better than them and things like that, because they were considered, you know, world class goalkeepers, obviously. And now that he's been in the squad for some time, I think when he came on board, it was why is he coming on board? Why is he being picked? Why is he playing? And you can see now why he's actually their number one goalkeeper, because like you're saying, consistently good, consistently. You know, making sure that he has a good game or whatever. And I think it helps with, like you were saying, it helps with the defence and he's quite vocal as well at the back, isn't he? Because you can always hear him, you know, giving instructions and things like that. As do most goalkeepers, hopefully. That's just me. Go on then. Should we move on?
Go on, man. You treat us, don't you?
Let's go on to Anna Toman. Might as well, because we spoke about her. So she's returned after a long break. And now we've just heard breaking news. Now we just heard that she's made captain as well, which, like you're saying, Si, a pretty good touch and shows that, you know, she's a well-respected member of the team and, you know, player.
Yeah, I was quite surprised. I mean, I do obviously rate her very highly. I think she's the best fullback in the world for women's hockey. She was our best attacking player at the World Cup in 2018. I've always had an enormous amount of respect for her when she was playing for Wimbledon against our team at Cambridge. Everyone just wanted to learn from how she played, like the composure, the skills, everything is there. She's quality. So, you know, and she's been going along to, it's hard when you're injured. She's been going along to all the matches at Pro League, cheering on the teams, despite how hard that must be mentally as well, knowing that you can't be on that pitch and you can't take part. and she's been out for, I think it was maybe even more than a year, possibly. So, yeah, to see not just that she's back, but that she's been named captain, I just thought was a really nice touch. And there are people in that squad who could definitely be captain as well. So I'm sure it's not just Ralphie is not known for being soppy. So I'm sure that this is legitimate based on her skills as a leader, not just, oh, you know, well done, mate, sort of little pat on the head sort of thing. So it's really nice.
Fraser?
I think he's covered everything in detail there.
He's a favourite player anyway, so, you know.
Because, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Who would have thought he'd be opinionated about Anna Tillman?
I'm opinionated about a lot of things. I respect her a lot as a player, and she's a nice person.
Yeah, yeah. No. Look, we know she's your favourite player anyway, right? So, you know, is she?
My favourite player is Timo Weissenborn.
Oh, okay, all right.
But has she won the Anna Tillman Award for being Anna Tillman?
No, but it's Flora Peel who always wins that.
Oh, brilliant.
Anyway, so that moves us on to the next thing, is the Mizuno kit and whether or not Vitality is still sponsoring, because they're not on it.
No one's on it, are they?
No one's on it. No. I just assumed that was like just a mistake. none of the kits got Vitality on it.
Okay.
Does none of the kit have Vitality on it in the new kit announcement, or does none of the kit that they're going to walk out for the game in?
I haven't seen any
20 minutes have Vitality on it.
I've seen none with Vitality on it.
Oh, okay.
So that's an interesting one.
They might have it. They might have it on when they walk out today.
Well, I mean, they've been taking pictures of them, sticking them up, and they're all. And, you know, normally their training kit's got Vitality on it, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
all the kits would have it, really, whether it's training or playing kit.
All the pictures that I've seen of the new kit since its announcement have been kind of press shooty pictures, rather than here's them warming up for the game later, or here's them training camps in Argentina. So
Hannah French has stuck up a lot of shots of them at training, like team array and stuff.
And yeah. none of it's got Vitality on it.
Sorry?
None of it's got Vitality on it. Okay.
Nope.
Strange. Maybe they just haven't got round to putting it on. I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah, what do you reckon to the kit anyway in general?
Well, it's a lot different to the junior kit that we saw, that we were bashing a few months ago.
I think it would have taken effort to be worse.
Well, you know, like we said, you know, when we first saw the kit for the juniors, it was all plain, wasn't it? Nothing on them. It was just a badge, and that was it. Badge and number, right? And the new kit looks nice. I think it looks all right. I think it looks nice.
I thought it looked okay, but I've seen a lot of people not impressed.
Really?
Mm.
But so, what about the old kit? The old kit wasn't that great. I mean, the old kit was pretty much very, very standard for Adidas.
If you were to knock the badging off, do you think that most people would be able to know that we had a new kit supplier?
Not really. I think, so this is obviously with a very technical head on, the kit looks better than the Adidas does. So like the shorts for women look better. The tops for women are definitely looking better. They're not like painted on skin tight things. They look like, it looks better on that front, I would say. But the design is very similar. I like the dark grayish kind of one. I really like that one. Not as cool as black, though.
So this was an opportunity where they could have stuck their flag in the ground, done a nice, interesting design, really distanced themselves from the Adidas kit before they probably went back to something very straightforward. So I think it's a missed opportunity from Mizuno on this to not make a kind of standout design kit, even if it was like the second or third kit, having something interesting that's going to stand out that people could look at and go, well, that's the new kit.
But on the flip side of that, what was their brief? Because they would have had a brief from England Hockey and GB, right?
Yeah, to say, boring red shirt.
This is what we're looking for. This is what we'd like. And I'm sure that possibly, right, they came up with a couple of designs and GB and England Hockey went, we're going to go with that one. Oh, we would like that one.
Yeah, I suspect they'll have come up with three different designs. One will be ultra conservative, one a bit different, and then one that's pretty wild.
So you can't really blame Mizuno for that, I don't think.
No,
because it would have been
for England GB.
Yeah,
All right, should we move on to the next thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We know we're not. Next. We don't like it that much, but it's all right.
Our next thing is something we definitely don't like, which is frozen games.
So oh, yeah.
Had a couple of weeks ago, quite a lot of games got either cancelled or abandoned, or sorry, postponed or abandoned. And then last weekend, just gone, almost everything was postponed. Like in the East region, I think about 10 games happened.
Yeah.
My frustration is nothing ever seems to be learned. Last year, all the slip weeks were before Christmas. We had loads of frozen games after the slip weeks. We had one in October. It's just ridiculous.
So what you're forgetting is that those are university slip weeks. Those are for university teams in the league to rearrange for after the students come back because the league starts too early for them.
Well,
that's legitimately why there's so many early ones, because universities were constantly trying to rearrange, is what I've been told.
Yeah.
So they put in earlier slip weeks for them to use. The fact that half of them fall before pitches really get frozen and there's a problem for the majority of clubs is a completely separate issue that they've not thought about.
Yeah. They thought about it and they just don't care. I mean, they're so determined to get it in before cricket season. And it's every year this problem happens, but we don't have enough slip weeks. We're also told you have to rearrange by the 27th of January, unless you're Surbiton, in which case you can have it on the 31st of January. And it's, you know, it's just really frustrating that every year the same problem happens and there's never any learning from it or any change.
Yeah.
So there's not much more to be said. It's just infuriating. And it's not fair on the volunteers who have to, well done to England Hockey for not sticking out an inflammatory tweet, winding every volunteer up again this year saying, oh, there's no hockey. What are you up to? And everyone replied, well, we're rearranging 26 games. Because that's what our fixture secretary had to do last year. Yeah. Anyway, so now on to a positive note.
He's not letting us have our say. We're not letting us have our say, but go on, carry on.
Right, you can if you want. Go for it.
No.
I'm conscious of time.
Listeners, just so you know, Simon had two cans of Red Bull at the start and they've just started to kick in.
No, but Si, I would agree with you. It is a bit frustrating for rearranged games and all that stuff, but unfortunately it is what it is at the moment and we can't really do anything about it. I think we should have a longer season anyway, but you know, like you're saying, they want to start it, finish it before the start of cricket season, whatever. But yeah. I don't see why a couple of weeks overlap is going to make any difference, really.
Nope.
And it's not traditionally now that a lot of hockey players play cricket or cricket players play hockey. It used to be that way many years ago, obviously.
Yeah, and they played on the same pitches because it was the cricket pitch was the hockey pitch.
It's not the case anymore. So no. I don't think, you know, an overlap would be that bad, really. But anyway. Right, go on then. Let's go. Next one.
So the last thing before we go to AOB was the pending debut for Rowan Boohey. I might have said that wrong, sorry. Who is making his debut for the GB Senior Men. He will be the first Sikh player to play for GB in 23 years.
That's some accomplishment, isn't it, really?
And also a pretty damning indictment of what happened. So the last Sikh player to play for GB was Manny, who anyone who's active on Hockey Twitter will be familiar with. Manny made quite a funny joke about his impact. I think it's really good that Rowan has made it there, and his brother is the under-21s goalkeeper as well. So that's really encouraging as well. Obviously, I work in this sort of area, so it's something I really care about. But I'm obviously commenting just as me, not as a professional mindset. I think, you know, England Hockey, GB Hockey have made a conscious effort to be more open and inclusive. And some people are pretty harsh on them on social media about it, but it's not going to happen overnight. But Rohan's talent has shown through, and he's proven that if you give people the chance, that they'll take it. And you know, he's the first guy in a very long time for a Sikh background. I mean, might not have even been alive when Manny played. So you know, he's a trailblazer, and I mean, it's great. And hopefully, kids will see him and think, "Oh, it could be me." I've literally heard kids tell Darcy Bourne how important it is to them to see someone who looks like them on the pitch. So hopefully for these kids, seeing someone who looks like them in the men's team is going to really help.
I mean, I don't know how many Sikhs and Indians or Pakistanis are on the pathway to being, you know, selected for England at all, or even GB, right? Is there a lot of them, or isn't there enough of them, or is it because that they don't get the chance to do it? I don't know, right? I appreciate that he's one out of however many years it's been, or decades.
I would say there's a, again, this is me personally, I think that there is a, there has been historically a block in the pathway system, maybe not always consciously. However, I disagree with the idea, the notion that hockey is an exclusively white sport is not true. Once you go to the Midlands, you can see pretty clearly it is not an exclusively white sport. The fact, obviously, Taff, you're on this call, proves this. There were people who were ethnically diverse playing, but not getting up. And it's the same with umpiring, the same with coaching. So I think it needed an intervention, and that's happened. That there's been changes made to the talent pathway system to try and make sure that people aren't excluded, either because of the color of their skin or the sound of their voice or their commitments to religion and so on. And he is testament that if you give people a fair shot, that they'll succeed.
Yeah.
And it's good that he's got there, and I'm sure more people will follow of lots of different diversity, different ethnic diversities.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, I think I'm on the notion, and I'm pretty sure you are. It doesn't matter about your background. It doesn't matter about where you come from, you know, how rich you are, how poor you are, whatever. Yeah. If you're a good hockey player, you should get the chance to represent, right? It should be on your talent and not your looks, not your background, not anything like that. I've always been a believer of that. And, you know, to me, and I've been like this as a coach, if you're good enough to play, it doesn't matter who you are. You'll play for the first team, or you'll play for the second team, or whatever. That's your standard. You will play for that team, yeah? And I'm hoping that this is going to be, like you're saying, this is going to be the start of the catalyst for the gates to be open for all these, you know, diverse players to come in and get a chance to actually represent. It's not that there isn't a lack of them. There's so many players that are in the, you know, county setup, you know, from different backgrounds and things like that, that are in the county setup and go to talent academies and you know, county setups and things like that, yeah? But they never get the chance to actually go any further than the talent academy or whatever. And again, I honestly think and I hope that this will be a start of, and we've had a lot of changes, haven't we, really, in the actual setup and the pathway and how people sort of like look at what's happening in terms of, like, you know, the women being able to wear shorts now, and, you know, which is a testament to Tess and stuff like that, and other people that were behind that. Now, that's a good change. This is a great change as well. Two good changes, and now hopefully it will move on, and we will get maybe more diverse players in the England setup and the GB setup. Fraser?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this around the new pathways stuff coming out. Obviously, talent should always get the opportunity. It shouldn't matter about background. It shouldn't matter about any of that stuff. The historical problem that we've always had is a class issue. So kids who go to a private school have access to a pitch more often, will have a hockey coach in a lot of the high-performing private school hockey teams, will have a hockey coach who will be coming in. And so they'll get better coaching, more access to coaching, and that has always shone through as to who gets to advance further. And then there's the off-pitch stuff. So if there's a group of friends going and one of the parents can't take them, there's someone to give them a lift. If you're not part of that group, you won't have access to that lift, which means a parent's got to commit to taking you. Like, having spoken to Tom Sorsby's dad on a number of occasions about how much involvement he had to have in making sure Tom got to all of his trials, got to all of his camps, having spoken to people who went through the England under 21 setups, admittedly a long time ago, he described it as a difference in class rather than any sort of racial or cultural, religious differences. He didn't know how to behave in those situations, whereas other players did. So he went in as himself, and other people put forward what the what the selectors wanted to see. And so I think anything that we can do to break down those barriers is fantastic. And seeing someone make it through is great for the sport.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, hopefully England and GB will rally behind him a bit and make this a big deal.
Yeah.
Which is another failing I think they've had in not shouting about these successes.
Yeah. I mean, I think you've knocked it on the head a little bit as well with regards to cultural backgrounds and stuff like that as well. You know, like, you know, a lot of parents of Asian kids will want them to actually be more academic rather than sporty kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? But those that are, and if they are in the setup, we should actually give them a chance. And then that would show, you know, like the older generation, whatever, that it's okay to be academic and also be a sporting excelling in sport. And hopefully, you know, like you're saying, we will get this Rohan publicized and people will see that there's going to be a bit more of a change. Fingers crossed. So good luck to Rohan, to be fair. And let's use him a little bit more in terms of publicising and stuff. Anything else? Are we going on to any other businesses, say, after this? Have we got any other business? Have you got anything, Fraser?
Yeah, so since our last recording, the hockey one in Australia has wrapped up. Brisbane Blaze won both the men's and the women's competitions. And at the end of the league, before they went into the finals, they also won the One Hockey Cup, which was cumulative points scored across both the men's and women's teams going into the finals. They had the highest cumulative total across both. New South Wales, I think, were the favourites on the men's. I think they went undefeated in the group stage, but Brisbane managed to pull it out in the final to win both. So,
oh, nice.
Cool. And it was available free to watch in Australia, which always want to promote hockey being broadcast for free. So, yeah.
Yeah. We should do that here more often, shouldn't we? anything else from you?
No, all good.
Cool. Well, in that case, thank you for joining me again, guys. It's been another long podcast, and hopefully I can cut it down a little bit. but thanks a lot again, and hopefully I'll see you on the next one.
Cheers, Taff.
Ta-ta.
Love that.